Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Inspire Health Podcast. And we are continuing on with our series on Creating New Earth, a Collaborative Mission. And today we brought back one of our favorite guests, Guy Needler. Guy's been with us a few different times. He's an author of, gosh, how many books is it now, Guy? Like 8 or 9 or something?
Right now it's 12.
12 books.
We're working on a 13th and a 14th in parallel.
You know, every time we talk to you, you're always in the middle of working on another book. So the guy,
he's on a mission.
Yeah, he's on a mission. And Guy wrote the books Beyond the Source, book one and book two. That's these books right here, if you're watching it on the YouTube, as well as Psycho-Spiritual Healing. Fascinating, fascinating work. I honestly don't think I've come across anybody's work that is really anywhere similar to yours. Used to work lots with Dolores Cannon back in the day too. We just recently talked to Suzanne Spooner, and I find this work really fascinating because it's like when we are talking about creating a new earth, when we go through your newest book, and Guy's newest book that we got is The Om, The Uncreated Creation. And when we start to go through that, I can't help but think there's, in some ways, there's really a template for when I think about what can we move to that would be new, a new way of living in the world, a new way of thinking, a new way of interacting with the world. There's a lot of points as I go through your book that make sense to me that this would be a really beautiful way to start to move forward and do things in a different way than how we've currently been doing them. So I will put links to Guy's previous episodes in the show notes as well, so you can check those out. The last episode we had with Guy in the Life, Death, and Beyond series was fascinating, and we had a lot of amazing comments back from people watching that episode. So, Guy, thanks again for joining us for this series.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to communicate with you both and to share some extra knowledge. Thank you.
So I would like to jump into the Om, the Uncreated Creations. Maybe you can give us just a little overview of how is this book different from the other ones that you've written, and how did this one sort of come into being?
It focuses on a group of entities that I am told I'm part of. I use those words gingerly because to say I'm part of this, you'd be quite egotistical. Whereas I was told a long time ago that I'm part of another group of entities who are not specifically part of those who normally incarnate on Earth, or even those who are part of the individualizations of sentience from our creator, our source, what we call God. And so I appear to be a bit of a maverick because the entities that I'm told are called the Om, which are part of the original creation, hence the word Om. I think they've adopted that from a human perspective more than anything else, I feel. In effect, are entities that were created as a function of the reuse of sentience and energy that the entity that created our God, called the Origin, which the Hindus call the Absolute or that which is beyond God, reused from another experiment to try to recreate itself. Which if you don't know what you are, how can you recreate yourself? So that's obviously doomed to failure, even from a human perspective. But the reuse of these energies and the sentience was not cleansed, if you want to call it, or not sort of sent back to factory settings, to use a human term or a computer term. And so the sentience that was there was mixed in with other sentience that was supposed to be for the level of entity we call a source entity. And they didn't mix, basically. So there was a number of different entities created, or different genres of these entities created. And the pure Om are those that basically aren't associated with any of the source entities, any of the 12 co-creators that the origin created. And so they wander in between, and they wander in, they do whatever they want to. They're not involved generally, not involved in any form of creativity because it creates responsibility. They weren't creative. They just happened to be created by accident. So if that's where the uncreated idea comes from, is they actually weren't created. They were part of something that just became uncreated because they were supposed to be part of a source entity or part of the individualizations of sentience that our source entity was going to create to populate a section of itself or individualized or compartmentalized section of its own structure that we know as the multiverse. So that's where the uncreated part comes from, because they were created and then uncreated. to become individualized. But there are a number of different genres. The pure version is what I'm supposed to be part of, which goes can go anywhere. There's non-captive om, which are generally associated with but don't get involved with the, so let's say, within the gravity, if you want to call it that, of a source. They don't get involved within the sphere of energies and frequencies. That's the sentience of the source occupies. So they stay outside of that. Then there's captive om, where they are inside, but they're still individual. They're still individual om, so to speak, but they're not as powerful, or they don't have the same sentient density or sentient quality to allow them to get outside of the source's sphere of sentience within the energies it's adopted. And then there's hybrid om, where there's a much smaller percentage of this sort of om sentience associated with the individualization of sentience from the source. And these are basically the same as anybody, really. It's just that they're like an alloy, to call that, of just different types of sentience. But they are within the evolutionary cycle the same as everybody else who incarnates into the multiverse or uses the multiverse.
Guy, you've mentioned in the past, and for those who are, this information is going right over your head, please check out his books for sure, and also the previous episodes that we've done, because I don't want to be redundant. I want to kind of dive into the deeper knowledge, deeper well of Guy's knowledge, because there's so much to cover. So please check out the previous episodes as well as Guy's books if you're interested. But you had spoken previously of the frequency in which we are residing in which this version of Earth is the lowest frequency. And I'm just wondering, what is Om wanting to do in the lowest of the lowest frequencies at this time? What's your mission? Why did you come?
To be honest, I'm not allowed to understand that myself. But what I do know is that the other entities continuously tell me, we still can't understand why you came here. Why did you want to come here and be stuck in concrete? That's basically what it's like. I get the impression that along with Anne, the of which the sentience was, that used me was split into two, so they were both part of the same sentience, which is a twinning feature. That happens as well in standard souls, where the same sentience is split between two or three bodies to get the twins or triplets. And they don't always end up in the same womb, by the way. But I get the impression that I'm here to sort of help people become more aware faster of who and what we are, and not get stuck in the idea that we have the human body. We exist only momentarily, and that's it. You know, it's beyond that. It's looking beyond. It's looking beyond the universe. Looking beyond the multiverse. It's realizing there's an awful lot out there, and it's just not what scientists think it is right now. And there's other entities that are incarnate that incarnate at a higher frequency, and they are more cognizant of who and what they are, and so they work towards bettering that and increasing their evolutionary progression. And so from that perspective, it's like illustrating that spiritualism or metaphysics or the information associated with those two subjects, which sort of should blend together but sometimes don't, are basically part of the road to enable us to understand what our reality really is. And if you look at it, there are little nuggets of truth that we get given in entertainment. I mean, The Matrix was a fantastic example of recognizing that what we think is reality actually isn't. And so that's a good thing. There's a lady who wrote a book called Twidders, who's another Ozark Mountain publishing author, by the way. And she interviewed a number of individuals who'd experienced, shall I say, ruptures in the reality or what we call time, and the people were seeing different scenes. You know, one person was in the middle of New York, and then suddenly seeing an image of an Indian before, you know, people from the continent, the European continent, sort of occupied it. And there was, you know, on a horse on a hill, just overlooking the countryside, and so observing these sorts of things is and understanding them and giving them some form of reference point rather than just the, shall we say, the kindergarten spiritual idea about what things are, to, you know, putting things in terms of, you know, angels or dolphins or flying horses, you know, unicorns, those sorts of things, even down to pixies, elves, et cetera, is okay for a start point, but we should be well beyond that by now. And so me being here and other people being here who are able to tap into or connect with the higher frequencies and therefore become attached to higher frequency information, or normally exist in completely different locations, is enabling us to give us a series of steps. I mean, Dolores said, we're only here for a moment, and we stand on the shoulders of giants, and we do. You know, I've stood on the shoulder of Dolores because she saw something in me that nobody else did. Well, sent my books. There's an old story about J.K. Rowling where she sent her books out to about 30 different publishing houses, and only one came back, and they were taking a chance. Well, it was sort of something similar with Ozark Mountain Publishing, with my stuff. And obviously, I'm not as popular as J.K. Rowling, but the effect on those who are looking for deeper meaning and understanding of what we really are, and going beyond the human body, is one of the reasons why I'm here. And the book on the arm is really explaining a bit more about my relationship with them and getting more information out of them whilst I'm still here to enable us to work upon what I've done previously and what other people like Eckhart Tolle have done previously, and of course Dolores and some of the work that Neil Walsh has done, which has been in the similar sort of direction, but not the same level of, shall we say, difficulty to understand, because they're good stepping stones, these people. It's all part of us, you know, being exposed to who we are and identifying ourselves as not being the human being, but also preparing us for thinking, behaving, and acting in a much more mature way. Because when we understand that actually, from a sentience-based perspective, even though we're individualized, we're part of another volume of sentience, and that volume of sentience that we call our higher self is part of another volume of sentience we call the source, then we start to realize that we're all one. And when we start to really understand that, then all the idea of famine, wars, discrimination will just go, because we'll start to work together properly. And I suppose me being here is part of that, you know, helping people understand by giving higher concepts, which is stretching for me, and it's stretching for the readers as well.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
I had mentioned that to you just before we started recording, in that every time we pick up your books and start diving in to what it is that you're offering, it's like working our brain in different ways. It's totally expanding the way in which we know and perceive reality.
Well, one thing that we were listening to when we were reading your book earlier, and we were sort of going back and forth with the concept, I can't remember exactly where it was at the moment, but it was around the concept of truth and sort of truth and falsehood. And this idea, I think you were having a conversation with the Om, and it was around the way that you had been thinking up to things was a good use of how you were thinking up until a certain point. And then you had to do something different. And it made me think, you know, there's so much conversation about what's right, what's wrong, what's truthful, what's not truthful. And it just made me think to a point, what is truth? Is there an absolute truth? And is truth really based on context and a very fluid concept? And it makes me think, like, yeah, I will pass that over to you. But it when we were listening to it and when we were speaking about it, it made it feel like truth really changes. It's almost like in this box of what we know, there's a certain level of truth. And then when we push the boundaries on that and we now need a bigger box, our concept of what is true again has to reshape and reform in a new way. So can you talk to us a little bit about truth and falsehood and that sort of concept?
Well, the truth, from my understanding, is what we're prepared to see or experience, and B, what we're capable of seeing and experiencing. And that capability is based upon our education and our personal expansiveness or the level of evolution that we've achieved. And as a result of that, the quality of sentience is part of our soul. So from the perspective of what is the truth, it depends upon how that truth can be broadcast to individuals who are interested in understanding it. So this is where we start to become, shall we say, limited, because the language that we have now is significantly more complicated and more diverse and more capable of describing concepts than it was 100 years ago. You know, we have different words for different things now. I mean, the word computer wasn't in existence, really. You know, the word artificial intelligence definitely wasn't. The word television was probably just something we thought about. Tele is a Greek word meaning distance or far. So if you go back another few years, let's say 500 years, you know, the concept of a motor, you know, an engine, a steering wheel, an aeroplane, you know, these words just weren't in existence. So the ability to be able to describe things that are not within the vocabulary of the individuals that we're trying to educate limits the way in which that truth is broadcast. And so you can understand why a couple of thousand years in the past, if somebody who was lowly educated, such as a shepherd or a goat herd, observed an entity that was being protected by an energetic field, and that energetic field was being observed by the oscillation of colors or magnetic field, for example, you might consider that as being angelic. And that oscillation in a field, which may be protecting them, but for instance, keeping them higher frequency in this low frequency environment so they can maintain their function, might look like wings, for example. So you start to see that what they're seeing is being changed into something that they know. And if it's long body with all these oscillations, you might think, well, it's probably got to be a human being of some sort. So then you put it into being humanized with wings, and it's beautiful. Well, angelic means beautiful. So you start to see that the words that are being used to describe something which was undescribable is based upon the education and the ability to understand the expansiveness of the individuals who are observing these phenomena or being educated by other individuals who have a higher level of knowledge, but are trying to explain something that only they understand to those who don't have the building blocks the foundation of other education beneath them to be able to understand it. For example, how do you describe a computer to somebody who's lived in a rainforest all their lives? You can't, because they don't have a framework. So you have to start to give examples based upon their environment and their own level of education. And so that limits the truth somewhat. So when in the history of God, I was trying to explain the multiverse, for example, and I knew there was something wrong, and I couldn't put my finger on it. But I was allowed to go to a certain level, understand the multiverse had 100 levels. That was wrong later, because that was what I was using to help project my sentience into these different levels to go there in a regular and robust and repeatable basis to create a constant communication regime with the, some of the entities that were there. Later on, I found out that was in error, because there was more structure to it and there was different levels of structure. And it still didn't feel right, right at the end of the history of God. And it wasn't until the first book on the Beyond the Source, the Beyond the Source book one, where I was reconnecting with the Source Entity One, what we call God. I only call it Source Entity One because it was the first Source Entity I got in contact with. That's the reason for the numbers, by the way, dear listeners. There's no actual numbers there. It's just how I've interacted with them. So at that point, I was told again that, no, there's a difference between the first full dimension and the rest of the dimensions, because it houses the lowest frequencies, and so it behaves in a slightly different way. And that different way is there's only 12 frequencies, because they collapse because of the low frequencies, and therefore those low frequencies can only create one universe because they're so low frequency. And so the way I can describe that is by having... In the old days, we had lots of floppy disks to load a program onto a computer. But now we can put thousands upon thousands upon thousands of the same file onto a memory stick. It's about finitude and content within the context of fineness. So being allowed to go in the wrong direction, because it's slightly in the right direction, is how we progress. So the level of truth is out of focus at first. And the more capable we are of understanding more detail later, that focus becomes sharper and sharper and sharper. So the level of truth is based upon what we're capable of understanding and what our teachers are capable of understanding as well, and how they broadcast it to us. And you can see why Jesus used, other great leaders used parables or stories to explain things, because there was no other way they could do it. And I find myself doing similar things by using engineering science to explain things, because there's no other way to do it in my mind. There's obviously different ways later, but we'll have to see what those are when the next masters of connectivity come along.
You had mentioned, I had this meditation or dream a while ago, where I had this vision of a black web. It was almost like the texture of goo that was wrapped around our planet, our world. And when you're speaking of, when we come in, we don't recall the high frequency knowings that we had previously been a part of. What is it that kind of disconnects us from that knowing, from that deeper connection to who we truly are? Is it something that's imposed on this planet from other sources? Or is this, I'm just wondering if you can explain that, because I don't know what else it would be.
The image that you've got is basically a representation of how low frequency it is here. And we create the low frequency by becoming addicted to low frequency thoughts, behaviors, and actions. Wanting to be associated with the physical, we want to have materialistic success, such as status, good jobs, lots of money, lots of belongings, cars, houses, all of these things. We like to have good food. We get addicted to good food. We get addicted to substances, alcohol, drugs, even things like chocolate. So we start to become a body associated. But before that, we accept that coming to this location and others that don't have the same level of individualized free will within the physical universe at different frequential levels, give us the chance of accelerating our evolutionary progression, because it's difficult. Part of the difficulty is it's low frequency. So when we naturally exist in a higher frequency environment, we're quite free. We understand, we are omnipresent, we're omniscient, we understand everything instantaneously because everything exists concurrently. There's no past, present, or future. It's already happening, it's already happened. And in the book I'm writing now, I understand why it's already happened, because there's a reason for it, because linearity started and linearity finished as a function of something else. So the fact that everything's happening right now means that we can connect with it right now. And one of the ways in which I was told this was again another example, but I'll leave that to one side. So when we're higher frequency, we know that we're going to enter into a lower frequency, and our communicative bandwidth is going to be affected significantly. When we individualize from our higher selves, we come into these bodies, the frequency we're existing at here is significantly lower than where we normally exist, or where our higher self is. So the ability for us to communicate with it becomes difficult. And the way I like to explain it, it's like being able to access, to normally access everything on the internet concurrently, but where we are now, the only communication medium we've got is Morse code. How can you communicate with Morse code with a supercomputer? You can't. You can do it. You can create the binary codes, but the communication is so slow. You probably die before you got to write the first chapter of information you want to communicate. So the difference is that we end up being almost totally cut off. Not fully cut off, because we're always connected. But the communicative bandwidth is such that we start to become body associated, and that creates the ego, the temporary personality that's associated with the incarnation. So it's not a case of we're forced into it. We want to come here because it's challenging. It's difficult. It makes us evolve in a really accelerated way compared to what it would have been had we stayed in the higher frequencies, because in the higher frequencies we know everything. And if you think of it this way, if we're in the high, the difference between being here in the higher frequencies is like having a roll of cinema film. Right now we're seeing each frame one by one. Yeah. When we accelerate seeing those frames up to about 60 frames a second, we see them as moving pictures. But 60 hertz is about the time when the eye starts to see things as a moving picture. You go above to 200 hertz, that becomes high definition. So we have the capability of only seeing things frame by frame, and maybe a bit quicker to see the frames moving. But where we are normally, we can see the whole reel of film in one go, because it's there. And that's the difference between where we normally exist and where we exist right now in terms of our communicative ability and our access to everything. But again, it's a challenge, isn't it? It's difficult to be here, but the benefits, the evolutionary benefits, even if you make what we would classify as a mess of it, it's still an evolutionary progression for us. And that's why we come here. And that's why we accept being individualized to the point of almost being cut off from who and what we are.
You know, Guy, you were talking about a couple of different things around what we get addicted to when we're here. And I can't help but think that when we are here in this incarnation on this planet at this time, so much of what we get addicted to, I actually find are often markers of what we deem as successful. So it's like we were talking about this just the other day, and it was sort of like, you know, if you are going to put a video out, you want to see a certain number of views for it, and you deem that being tied with whether that's successful or not. Or if you're going to be a writer and you are going to be an author and you put a book out, then you want to make sure that it gets out to a certain audience or it becomes a bestseller, these types of things. From the Om's perspective, what does success look like from, and how is that different from how I think we deem success now in this incarnation, how it's sort of accepted as what is successful, versus what would be if we are moving to a new world of doing things, how would a new perspective of success look like?
Well, from the Om's perspective, success is not being involved with anything that creates responsibility. because they move up, because once they get involved with any form of creation, then you end up being responsible for that creation. So based upon that, they from their perspective, success is steering clear of creating anything, which is probably why they still can't work out why I'm here, to be honest. But from the perspective of success, it's from our perspective, success would be, again, I keep going on about this, recognizing who we are, and an understanding that this really is the opportunity to expand our sentience, increase the sentient quality, increase sentient density, but through evolution. And to do that, we need to work together. We don't need to compartmentalize ourselves by which particular skin color we've got, what particular ability we've got with our physicality, what particular educational level we've achieved. We just need to recognize that we could all achieve everything together and help each other to navigate through being incarnate without being addicted to anything that's associated with being here. Because a number of things that are addictive to the point where souls want to come back is they want to experience things like, sensory perception, such as close bodily contact through sex, through eating certain foods, through achieving certain levels of status, to achieving certain levels of wealth, or enjoying the ability to be a certain type of individual, for example, such as specializing in a certain career role. Those are the things that we do. But if we could help each other doing that, and but still not being addicted to it, then that's success. And I guess that once we've done that, I think even the Om would understand that to get to the point where you can move away from being addicted to the place where you have to keep coming back to try to detach yourself, it's a bit like a fly trying to get out of a spider's web. It removes all of its legs apart from one, and then puts another leg back to try and remove the other leg. It's got two legs stuck in a spider's web. It needs to understand that maybe it needs to lose the last leg to survive. So it's really about understanding what we're going to sacrifice, and that's a little bit of our freedom to allow us to work together, so that we start to navigate through being incarnate without being stuck in this idea of I've got to be this, I've got to be that, I've got to own this, I've got to own that, I've got to be powerful, these sorts of things. And that's what I think success is from not just from my perspective, but I think the Om's perspective, other than the fact of steering well clear of anything that creates creativity. But in the book I'm writing now, just to sort of help a little bit, there's going to be a point in the, from our perspective, a vast distant event space where there is no more individualization of sentience. We're all going to be part of the origin sentience again, as we were originally. And that's so that the origin can move out of structured space into non-structured space. And so success from that perspective, from a high level of understanding, is accepting that we don't need to be individualized. We accept that we're part of something bigger, and we rejoice in being back in communion with that something bigger. And that for me is that's success, being something bigger, not being a big fish in a small pond, but being the pond, or being the sea, or being the ocean, et cetera, et cetera.
That's really interesting. So when you speak of that event time space, does this then include, I guess this is a separate question too with regards to artificial intelligence, but are we speaking of all entities, whether they're predatory entities or you know, sources which we've deemed to be separate from the benevolent for source. We're speaking of all and everything returning back to the origin.
That's right. I mean, it's a long way away. I mean, right now, from our perspective, or from the perspective of when I first started this work, the origin sentience was microscopically small in comparison to the structure, the section of the structure of space it's in. I'm talking about it being, well, uncountable in terms of its size in comparison to where it is now. As an example, think of one of the leptons, a quark, going from that size up to the size of the multiverse. And that wouldn't be big enough. That wouldn't be big enough. That's the difference. That's how big the origin is going to grow and much more. So to be part of that, an understanding that is what success is, helping the origin create that possibility where you could be part of it, not just an individualized small part, but the origin. That's success. And we can only achieve that when we lose our fear of who and what we are, because through understanding what we really are, not that we are the human body.
The Inspire Health podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Tay had mentioned artificial intelligence. There's a section in your book where you talk specifically about artificial intelligence and have a communication with the Om around even what is intelligence and what the humans actually don't function very much with intelligence. I just think it's an interesting one to explore because we, you know, as humans, I would say for the most part, especially now, we have valued intellect as being a really prestigious sort of thing to attain. And it's also well respected in this area of reason and whatnot. I'm just wondering from that perspective, then what is intelligence and how is human intelligence different from artificial intelligence?
Intelligence that human beings have got is a function of sentience. It's like the operating program associated with the mainframe computer. It's a subsection. It's a sub program basically. It's an ability to understand our environment and reason with it and work with it and navigate around it. Whereas artificial intelligence that we've got right now is just they're just clever programs, clever parallel processing at times. Based upon usually, and no doubt some computer scientists will say I'm wrong there, but levels of data that can be arranged in all sorts of different matrices called lookup tables, and the ability for a program to search information and compare and contrast is what it's all about. So, and learning and finding faster ways of doing that is classified as intelligence, but it's not really. It's just finding shortcuts. It's just understanding that question has been asked before. There's the answer. That question has been asked before. There's the answer. So it's really remembering different questions and different answer routines And when the same question comes, and comparing those questions that are coming in now with what's been answered, and then, okay, right, rather than going through this big number crunching routine, I can go straight up there because that was asked before and that was the answer. So the programs create databases within databases, and that's classified as intelligence, but it's really not, because until machine intelligence is capable of creating, fully creating, and that means understanding its environment and manipulating the environment, observing what they've created and modifying it, recreating it or destroying it or improving it, and also recognizing that the environment that it's in needs to be maintained or preserved, then it's never going to be intelligent. It's always going to be a series of very clever subroutines based upon more and more powerful processors. The thing with the human body is that we think the brain is what we are. It's not. It's the soul. And the soul exists in somewhere called the soul seat. The soul is our sentience. The brain is simply a very complicated junction box that allows the soul to animate the body. And this is why when we have problems with things like dementia, when the soul's leaving, the body's not being controlled very well. Or if you have brain damage, the soul can't control the body very well because the junction box is damaged. So in essence, when we start to recognize that what we are is something different, and that our intelligence is based upon is a subset of sentience, and we're sentience, then we will never be able to recognize how we could create artificial intelligence. Now, there are quite a large number of civilizations out there that are machine sentience, and machines can become sentient, and they can become sentient in a number of different ways, either through self-development or they're given sentience by a higher form of, let's say, biological or energetic sentience. But sentience is not a soul. It's simply a very highly complicated way of understanding the environment and working in the environment and communicating with others and interacting with others. And so an understanding and experimenting and knowing and wanting to know more. And this is the difference between sentience and intelligence, because intelligence could be classified as being, for instance, intuitive to a certain level, but intuitive levels of understanding is well beyond sentience. It's cosmic consciousness. But I'm thinking more in terms of how certain things gravitate together. For instance, oil will gravitate towards oil in water, for example, and stick together. Yeah, and bigger areas of oil will gravitate together. Some people might classify that as intelligence, but it's not. It's just attractivity. But intelligence is initially can be created through attractivity. From what I can see right now, and my understanding of computer technology, which is going to be limited compared to the experts, we don't really have an artificial intelligence. All we have is clever algorithms that's being sold as artificial intelligence.
So I guess then when we're speaking of human intelligence, we can probably more accurately state that we're well programmed as opposed to intelligent entities.
Well, we're unprogrammed and then reprogrammed. And what I mean by that is that when our soul enters into the body, it's a smaller percentage of the total sentience of the higher self. It's around 2.5%. That's been given to me. It can be more, it can be less, but the average is 2.5%. That sentience becomes body associated at the point of gestation of the fetus within the mother's womb. It comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes, and as it stays more, it starts to lose this contact with what it is in a meaningful way. So the communicative bandwidth reduces to the point where communication is so low, as with the Morse code versus the supercomputer connectivity. So the sentience starts to associate itself with the body, its environment, rather than what it really is or was. And so that's the unprogramming side. And the programming side is when it starts to become really associated with the body and start to recognize that the environment around it is where it is, what it is, It starts to listen to its mother and its parents and its siblings and its friends and its authority figures and starts to become programmed in that way. So in essence, the soul, at the start of association with the body it's going to incarnate into, would have levels of intelligence well beyond what we would classify as being intelligence, because it's sentience. But the sentience starts to deprogram because it becomes associated with low frequency existence and an environment, and so becomes lower than what it is, simply because it can only communicate in, for example, Morse code. And so that means that we lose what we are by being here. It's only temporary, though, because when the body demises, we return back to where our true energetic self is. But from the perspective of our intelligence, the intelligence here is significantly lower than what we really have, which is sentience, when we are out of the body.
It makes me think of what Oracle Girl or Jacqueline was talking about recently, in that our most important, she said, just remember that your work in this lifetime is done, that your most important priority at this time is open to receive, absorb, and anchor in pure love frequency. And that's really what we're to be doing right now. And is that what I'm hearing from you as well?
It's a different way of saying the same thing. I mean, we don't understand what pure love is from a human perspective. All we think of love is attractivity that helps us reproduce and liking somebody a lot. But love is all love from an energetic perspective is about full communion with what we really are, being part of the larger volume of sentience that we really are. And so if we can connect with that volume of sentience that we're projected from whilst we incarnate in some way, shape or form, whether it's through meditation, whether it's through being of service, whether it's through thinking higher thought levels, then that achieves the same thing as what you've just described right now as being, we need to connect with pure love energy. It's the same sort of thing. It's just a different way of explaining it. It's more of it's not a scientific way of explaining it, but sometimes people can't understand the scientific way. So we have to use a different way of explaining the truth. Yeah. It's just that explaining the truth in a less, using words that are less educated or with less detail behind them can create a slowness of understanding eventually.
Yeah, and I think the other part that comes with that is that it's very much a process and an experience of actually having an experience rather than trying to think about what it is that we are trying to do. It's genuinely connecting to this this thing that we're talking about. One thing I'd like to jump into too, and this kind of falls back in with success a little bit, but you also talk a little bit about manifestation. And I think this is a really big topic too. I mean, so much information around manifestation and how we create things. And I'm just wondering from your book, when you're talking about it, it says that all that is required is the desire behind the intention and focus on the intention. And those are sort of at the heart of it. From that perspective, in this reality, can we create almost anything we want using that formula? Or is there limitations based on our life plan and that sort of aspect?
The reason why we don't is we are programmed into thinking that we can't. We're given limitations. We are given limitations by people who we consider as being our authority figures, mothers, fathers, teachers, politicians, leaders, governments, et cetera, et cetera, history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we're programmed into being failures, basically, because we're not showing what we're capable of doing. But if we can move beyond that, detach ourselves from these limitations and realize that actually everything that is here is a function of our acceptance of a certain reality. We're told that we can live in a house and the house is there. We're told that if we flick the switch over there, the light comes on. everything we create around ourselves now is a function of our desire to accept what we've told as being true, which is interesting because now that brings us onto quantum fluidity, which I've never been dying to ask the question about. But basically, everything, certainly in the physical universe, in the multiverse, it's a different thing altogether because everything is everything, full stop. But from the physical universe perspective, everything is everything else, except where we are focusing on it being something else. So everything has quantum latency and therefore quantum fluidity. They're sort of almost the same thing, where the energy that's creating my mouse, if you can see my mouse, is only a mouse because I accept it's going to be configured into being a mouse. But if I truly understood that I could change my thought process and say, that's not a mouse anymore, it's a watch, it could become a watch. Because it's only sentience that keeps what we think as being solid, as being solid, as being reality, as being this particular reality. We collectively and individually create what's around us because we want it to support our belief system, not our experiential system. But sometimes the experiential system buys into the belief system because we experience something that is consistent with it. If we were given experiences while we incarnate of what we normally experience, normally create in the energetic, then everything would be totally fluid because everything at the quantum state is everything else.
This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.